Hi, this is Carrie, and this podcast is going to talk about Alzheimer's disease, dementia, and delirium. There is a PowerPoint posted within the section of within the course, so if you'd like to open that and just view that and take some notes on a piece of paper as we go through this, that would be great. If you are a paper person and want to print it out and write your notes right on the PowerPoint itself, that's just fine as well. So I just want you to listen as we go through these various cognitive disorders. So let's start on the first slide. The three most common cognitive problems that we see in adults are dementia, and within dementia, it can be classified as dementia itself. Alzheimer's disease also falls into that form, and we are going to talk about each of those specifically. We're also going to talk about delirium. Delirium is also termed as acute confusion, and it's important to understand the difference between dementia and delirium, and how do we know the difference. So there is a table in your textbook that I would like you to refer to. Please take a few minutes to go through that. As we go through these slides, it's going to depict all those different things that are laid out within that table as well. But that table kind of just a nice comparison chart of basically everything we're going to talk about moving forward. The other thing on that slide is depression. And depression is often associated with dementia and delirium. And so we do see that in the older adult. And a lot of times it goes with multiple diagnoses. The more diagnoses a person will have, the more likely they are to become depressed. So it is also our job as nurses to help identify, is it truly depression that is causing some of the confusion they're experiencing, or is it a dementia or an acute confusion or delirium? And we will work through these and help you figure out how to tell the difference. So let's start with dementia. There are many things that categorize itself as dementia. It can be dysfunction or loss of memory, orientation, attention, language, judgment, and reasoning. Sometimes with dementia, you will also see personality changes with people. That's also true with Alzheimer's disease, and we'll focus on that a little more there. But people who used to be nice and friendly may become aggressive and quite mean at times. So that can be just part of the disease process. Behavior problems, again, such as agitation, they may have delusions or even hallucinations. Ultimately, these changes cause major life disruptions. There's an inability to work, perform activities of daily living, and an inability to complete role responsibilities within the family. So it's important to recognize that sometimes the individual themselves may not realize what's going on, but it may be the family members who are the first ones to go, you know what, something isn't quite right. Physicians are usually going to diagnose when two or more brain functions are significantly impaired. Generally, those are memory loss and language skills. Dementia itself, on the next slide, talks about that it's not a normal part of aging. It affects 15% of older Americans. There are various causes, over 100 different causes of dementia, but 60% of those patients actually have Alzheimer's disease. And half of the patients in most long-term care facilities have dementia. A lot of the long-term care facilities now also have a dementia wing or an Alzheimer's wing where these patients can function within their abilities and not necessarily have to do the same routine as the rest of the residents living there. The etiology and pathophysiology. Dementia can be from treatable and non-treatable conditions. The two most common causes are neurodegenerative conditions, 60 to 80% of the cases. Again, this is Alzheimer's disease when we're talking about neurodegenerative. There's also vascular disorders. Those are also known as multi-infarct dementia. With that, there's loss of cognitive function due to brain lesions caused by cardiovascular disease. Just like we can see around the rest of the body, you can have those same plaque formation and plaque buildup and ischemia happen within the brain itself. So we have a decreased blood supply due to these blocked arteries. The treatable conditions are potentially reversible. Initially, these conditions, if we can catch it soon enough and treat the plaque within the arteries, they may return to their normal brain function. However, with prolonged exposure of disease, irreversible changes may occur. The longer an area goes without oxygen, the more likely there is to have some cell death and therefore irretrievable loss of brain function. There are some predisposed risks for dementia. Talks about these on the next slide. They include smoking. With smoking, we have to really think of what causes, what works with that. We have damage to our lungs, which decreases oxygen intake as well. But we also have to think about the nicotine and the vasoconstriction that causes, and that causes that within the brain as well. We can have cardiac dysrhythmias. People who have cardiac dysrhythmias, the different rhythms that the heart can beat at can allow plaque formation more within the blood vessels, or actually blood clots can form and actually travel. And a lot of times we're thinking more of stroke when we see that. But depending on the size and if it just gets caught in a little plaque and doesn't occlude the artery, it can cause forms of dementia as well. Hypertension, hypercholesterolemia, diabetes, coronary artery disease. Hopefully those should make sense to us as we're thinking about plaque formation within our vessels and decreased blood supply. The last one, metabolic syndrome, is seen frequently in patients with type 2 diabetes. And you'll see that, you may see that term within that category of people as well. But this is characterized by insulin resistance, increased insulin levels, increased triglycerides, decreased HDLs, or your high density lipoproteins, your increase of your LDLs, your low density or your bad ones, and hypertension. So if we think of that picture of that person, metabolic syndrome, if they're classified as having metabolic syndrome, a lot of times it will go hand in hand with type 2 diabetes as well. Some of the signs of clinical manifestations that we see with dementia, it's going to be very different almost for every person. The onset of dementia is going to depend on the cause. Generally insidious and gradual, meaning it's going to happen over a slower amount of time, weeks to months. Seen most often with neurological degeneration and Alzheimer's. And again, before that can be truly diagnosed, it can be years before that happens. It could also be abrupt. If it's a vascular dementia, it tends to be more abrupt. Again, as we have that loss of blood flow, lack of oxygen to that area, we may see that happen as well. It can be acute or subacute patterns of change, and it can be more indicative of infection or metabolic changes. In older adults, acute confusion or delirium, most often caused by infection or upper or a UTI, possibly, you will see that as well. Other things that you may see to cause some of that dementia could be encephalitis, meningitis, hypothyroidism, and drug-related dementia. However, it is difficult to distinguish the cause of dementia, whether it's vascular or neurodegenerative, based on symptoms alone. Patterns are going to occur over a period of time, and these will be most indicative of either an infectious or metabolic cause. So we kind of sometimes have to watch and rule things out. There's no specific way based on symptoms to truly know what's going on right away. The dementia itself can be classified as mild, moderate, or severe. And if there is, the next slide shows a table that has the symptoms with each of those. Early or mild can easily be hidden by someone. Forgetfulness beyond what is normal, short-term memory impairment. A lot of times they may hide that they don't know or don't remember or laugh about it. Those types of things early on. Loss of initiative and interest, decreased judgment, geographic disorientation. They may get lost or forget their way easily. In moderate signs of dementia, there may be impaired ability to recognize family or friends. They may just be forgetting names of people they've known for a long time. They may remember the face, but they may not be able to put a name to it. Loss of remote memory, more confusion. They're going to forget things that maybe they had been doing, a pattern of doing. Maybe they're forgetting what day they celebrate Christmas on. You've celebrated it the second or the Sunday after Christmas for the last 20 years, and they forget something like that, okay? Apraxia, aphasia, insomnia may be part of the moderate dementia. Delusions, hallucinations, behavior problems, they just don't act like themselves. It's usually at this point where if they haven't gone in and a physician has caught it already with them, family members are taking them in saying there's really something wrong here. We really need to figure out what's going on with mom or dad or your friend, whoever it may be. The late signs of dementia are really quite sad because people become people they aren't, or not who they used to be, I should say. There's little memory. They're unable to process any new information. They can't even remember sometimes even their daily routines of when they get up and that type of thing. There's difficulty eating and swallowing. They lose their ability really to totally care for themselves. They forget how to eat. You can set a plate of food in front of them and they don't even remember that they need to eat or how to eat. They do not know usually where they are. They're not able to effectively communicate and carry on a conversation. They may just make repetitive words or sounds. They're also generally going to become immobile. They're going to be wheelchair bound. They may just pivot, and they're going to have incontinence as well. How do we diagnose it? That talks about on the next slide. We're going to focus on our cause first. Is it reversible or non-reversible? Is it related to an infection or a vascular plaque that we maybe can make some headway on? Or is there just degeneration going on within the neurons? So we need to look thoroughly at a patient's history, look at their medical history, what other comorbidities do they have that could be making things worse, look at their neurologic status, what patterns have they seen, what things can be reported. Again, the patient themselves are going to be bad history givers in this because they're really probably not going to know. So family members may be our best source of information. They'll also do some psychologic exam with them. The physical exam, again, will be used to rule out other medical conditions. They're going to look for a vitamin B12 deficiency. This is important with memory and to help with cognitive functioning. So they're just going to look for the natural B vitamins that we need. They're going to look for hypothyroidism. Hypothyroidism will decrease our metabolism. It's going to slow everything down, including our processing of information. And they're possibly neurosyphilis is another a medical condition they can look for. This virus can actually attack the brain and cause lesions within the brain itself. So the world rule those out. The other thing they're going to do is they're going to do mental status testing. The mini mental state exam is something that you'll see them frequently do on the neuro unit. I know some of you are on the ortho neuro unit in Sioux City, and some of you maybe saw it when you weren't on the ortho neuro unit. Excuse me. I know I saw it on rehab as well. But it's a pretty commonly used tool in an assessive cognitive functioning. It's pretty easy to do. As students, you can easily do this as well. There is an example in your textbook, and I'd like to refer you to that. The current textbook we're using, it's on page 1521. Sample items. You can simply ask them what is today's date, and hopefully they can recite that to you. You can have them repeat back words that you're saying and see if they can repeat back something that you had just said to them. Naming things, you can ask them what something that is a common item they should know, possibly a pencil or a pen, if their breakfast or dinner tray is there, a fork, something they should know. See if they can name that to you. Also, you can ask them to read something and ask them to do what it says. The example in your book says the examinee's words would say to them, close your eyes. And so they would need to read that, and you would need to see them close their eyes so you can know that they're processing what it's asking them to do. So that is something very simple that we can have them do to test their general overall cognitive ability. Other diagnostic studies we're going to talk about on the next slide starts with depression. This can often be mistaken for dementia and vice versa. So the signs and symptoms for depression we have listed there on the slide. Sadness, difficulty thinking and concentrating, fatigue, apathy, saying, I don't know, I'm not certain, feelings of despair, inactivity. Those are all things that we can see. And again, those are more with depression than they're going to be with dementia. When the depression is severe, poor concentration and attention may result, causing memory as well as functional impairment. But when depression and dementia occur together, which may occur in up to 40% of the patients with dementia, the intellectual deterioration can actually be quite extreme. So what other things can we actually look at to determine if they have dementia? We're going to look at a CT scan that can tell us a little bit. They're going to be basically looking for the presence of vascular brain lesions and exclusion of Alzheimer's disease. So we're going to just generally seeing if they can see any changes within the brain. So the CT and the MRI are going to be really great to do that. Other things they can use to look at the central nervous system changes are a SPECT and a PET scan. Although these are not routinely used in diagnosis, they may go to those if the others are negative. If a patient has Alzheimer's disease, the CT and MRI may show brain atrophy and enlarged ventricles, especially if it's in the later stages of Alzheimer's disease. So that kind of gives us a little bit more idea about dementia in and of itself. We're going to talk a little bit about mild cognitive impairments. This is basically just a state of functional ability below defined norms that does not meet criteria for dementia. So they maybe have some memory that's impaired, but they can still function pretty normally. So the symptoms are not severe enough to interfere with their ADLs. So they can't remember things that normal people can for their age. Intact activities of daily living, normal general cognitive functioning. They're just, people would basically classify themselves as forgetful when they have this. To the casual observer, to anyone looking at them, many people with mild cognitive impairment may seem fairly normal. However, the person with MCI is often aware of a significant change in memory, and family members also can observe these changes in their abilities. So again, they're usually the ones to say something. 10 to 20% of people greater than 65 years have some mild cognitive impairment. 15% of those will develop dementia. Presently, there's no widely accepted guidelines for treatment, basically because we don't really understand a whole lot about it quite yet. But we basically need to keep monitoring them, help them, and look for the warning signs for Alzheimer's disease. I want to quickly go through those. These are found in your textbook on page 1524. If you would like to read through those. But mild cognitive impairment, not with mild cognitive impairment, excuse me. We're going to talk about Alzheimer's disease. That's where I was going. The 10 warning signs of Alzheimer's disease. The first one is memory loss that affects job skills. The second one, difficulty performing familiar tasks. The third one, problems with language. The fourth, disorientation to time and place. The fifth one, poor or decreased judgment. Number six, problems with abstract thinking. Number seven, misplacing things. Number eight, changes in mood or behavior. Number nine, changes in personality. And number 10, loss of initiative. We are going to stop this first podcast here. When we pick up, we are going to continue on with Alzheimer's disease.